Here we are on the formerly known as Story of God Pod, which we do not have a name for this.
Uh-oh.
Dan and Aiden After Hours.
I like that. That's good.
We should work on it.
Yeah. There's more to the story. More to the story.
More to the story. That's not a bad.
Whoa.
That's not a bad. See, this is fresh. This is what happens. We'll be comes up. That's not a bad. More
cast to, your vote.
More to the story. Like it kind of follows up the story of God. It's more from Sunday. All right,
like
Dan. We were on Sunday morning. Dan looks at me and he says, "Are we recording a podcast this week?" To which he declined my time. I sent him to record a podcast. I said, "Well, I thought we were, but you declined it." He goes, "Can I tell people we're going to record a podcast?" I said, "Yeah, tell them, and we'll figure it out." So he told you. So here we are.
We're figuring this out.
We're figuring this out. You were talking a little trash on Sunday about rom-coms, probably offending a lot of people. And you said, "My wife made me watch The Notebook." Not everybody's wife makes them. Some people just like it.
Just like it. Some you enjoy it.
I'm a fan.
Yeah.
There's a. I'm going to be honest with you. There's a dicey scene in that movie that I have not seen. And we watched it with my mother when we were dating.
Oh,
so that was weird.
Hello. Yeah,
I think that was my wife's first introduction. She's like, "I recommend this movie. I didn't know. I'm sorry."
Yeah, yeah.
What's the rom-coms that you'll? What's your favorite rom-com?
Oh,
if you had to pick one,
is Remember the Titans a rom-com? I don't know that I could pick one. I watched that with. I don't know. My wife made me watch that. I watched it because she enjoys that. And I enjoy her.
And to be fair, we talk about movies, me and your missus, and you guys watch some good movies together too. It's like she puts up with other stuff as well.
She does. She is incredible that way. I don't know. Give me some rom-coms and then I'll tell you which one I like.
I'm not even, I got to think about it.
Yeah,
now
I don't even know.
No, like, I got to. I'm a bit. Me and Jen have talked about this. Like 90s. Rom-com Sandra Bullock, While You Were Sleeping. Wonderful rom-com. Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah. My wife likes all those. Yeah. And I love them.
Do you like the movies that I recommend to you?
Yeah. If you guys will catch us off the... No, I don't. None of them. I have not liked any of them.
Sarah has said, "Stop making recommendations to Dan." She's like, "Stop."
You recommended one. I'm not going to say which one. He recommended, because you guys probably love it too. And my wife and I got an hour into it, and I said to her, I'm like, "I'm not sure how anybody watches this."
Was it Project Hail Mary?
I'm not going to say, but we just have different tastes, Aiden. That's what makes it beautiful in the body of Christ.
Which reminds me of differences come together. In So this Sunday we talked about marriage, right? We talked about marriage. You kind of said at the top, if there's... On a Sunday, if we've got 1,000 people in that room over the course of the day, there's 1,000 different stories that come to. So you preach and you're like, "Here is what Scripture talks about." But maybe we start here. You promised everybody you're going to draw a picture.
Yeah.
You told everybody, "I'm going to draw a picture."
Yeah.
It's a picture that you've drawn before. I use every time I meet with somebody for premarital. Mm-hmm. We looked at this Ephesians 5 passage. Mm-hmm. And so I want to throw the ball to you to draw us that picture and then maybe us... dialogue a little bit
and
out of that.
It talks about so Ephesians 5 is, I think, primary passage on marriage.
Yeah.
And so when we do premarital, give it to every couple that we meet with. It starts, so the passage that I start with is verse 21, clear down to 33. And verse 21 says, "Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ." And then what Paul does, he talks about husbands and wives. Then he talks about children and parents. Then he talks about slaves, masters, so on and so forth. The passage talking about husbands and wives can be a little difficult because there's things in there that people who are new to the word are like, "Oh, what's this? Wives, submit to your husbands. Like, what's this about?" You
know, feels like very 1800s.
It feels like a different day and age. And so the picture that we draw is just an attempt to somehow pictorially help people understand God's picture of marriage, because we would say it this way: if 50% of the marriages don't work,
mm-hmm.
that's a problem. And I wouldn't say Christian marriages are doing much better,
right? Right.
So is the problem marriage, or is it with our picture of marriage?
Yeah,
you tracking? And maybe it is just we have the wrong picture of marriage. And so what we're doing with this is just trying to draw a picture. And I'm going to do my best here to – I have to do all the work on this.
Describe it while you're doing it for those that are driving or running.
Yeah. If you're not watching this, Well, you're missing quite a treat here because we're drawing this picture. I would say at the top I have a gal and a guy, and I say our culture looks at marriage almost like you grab this rope, run through life together, and the problem is very quickly can become a tug of war. You want to go your own way, and so 50% of them just break, right? Divorce just happens. And so when you look at Ephesians 5, the picture, I have the fella on at the top end of the whiteboard and the gal down here at the bottom end. And I would say that when the Bible talks about marriage, God starts this thing with says, submit to one another. And he does say, husbands, I want you to be the head as Christ is the church.
Yeah.
And so I always write at the top, over top of the husband, lead like Jesus. That's what he's saying. And if I'm going to lead like Jesus, I'm not going to just live marriage this way, but I'm going to bend my life for the sake of my wife. That's what I'm going to do. So I write words like, I'm going to servant lead. I'm going to be a sacrificial lover. I'm going to be a sanctifying agent. In other words, I use this illustration Sunday. If I stood before Jesus and he said, is she any more like me and in love with me as a result of being married to you, right? That's all sanctification means.
Yeah.
And so it's just the husband, the key is bending his life for the sake of his wife. And then we look at Genesis 2, and I always love this. We talked a little bit about Sunday. When God created the woman, he created her to be a helper.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some people are like, I don't want to be nobody's helper, right?
Yeah.
But then we understand in the Hebrew of the Old Testament that it is the same word God uses to describe himself.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, maybe he means something different than just daddy's little assistant here.
Like in the Psalms when he says, the Lord is my help, the Lord is my... It's like this foundation.
Foundation. In fact, I would suggest in the Genesis it says suitable helper, and that's fine. It's taking two Hebrew words and connecting them into suitable helper. But there's this sense of that word as a strong helper.
Yeah.
Right? So if I'm going to lead like Jesus as a husband... the question is, what does it mean to help like God? Because he saw the man was alone. He's like, that ain't good. And so marriage is the wife leveraging her life. He created her different. He created her to be a helper. So to encourage, to add value, to give input. What does it mean? All those things God does, right? God is my helper. That's not me. I just come up with my agenda and like God help me pull off my agenda. Yeah. Sometimes it's like he changed my agenda, right? And so what if marriage, and I just am drawing this circle, was two people submitting into the role that God has for them in marriage out of reverence for Christ? Well, then all of a sudden, marriage looks like something that you wear on your finger, right? Yeah, that's on your thumb.
It's on any finger.
I'm sorry. Yeah, there we go.
I feel so passionately about it. It occupies all fingers.
It also is the first letter of what Jesus says marriage is, two people become one, right? And so when you see two people that are submitting, or I would say leveraging their life and even the role God gives them for the benefit of the other, that's when two become one.
Yeah.
And I think it is a picture of what God says marriage is, a covenant. So we're going to protect this thing because we're giving up our life for the sake of the other. And I draw, in my conversations, I draw an I in there because it's in that context, into me see can happen.
Yeah.
Because I'm bending my life. And I think this becomes a picture for just the robust, which I think is what we need in our culture, the robust, beautiful picture of what marriage can be. If I lead like Jesus, I help like God, all of a sudden two lives giving away their life for the sake of the other. That to me, and it's not always easy.
Yeah.
Right? It's not the fairy tale. It's not the, I mean, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's simply me doing that as an expression of what I experience from God.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what he does for us.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. And so that's all marriage is. It's this beautiful picture. And when they exchange rings at a wedding ceremony, I always look at the couple and say, that's the picture we drew.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, we may not say it out loud, but it's kind of like, that means more than just a piece of jewelry saying I'm married. That is the picture of two people bending their life for the sake of the other. And I think it becomes a great way to remember what God's picture is.
And it becomes those moments when I want to do things my way, when I'm emotional and frustrated with something, when I feel like I'm in the right. we're not doing things, and vice versa, if Sarah feels that way, we're not doing those things because I deserve something, I need to get back at that person, this person's right. It's out of reverence. It begins with out of reverence for Christ. And that becomes, I was talking to a guy this week that all these things you want to change, you pursuing your wife is honoring Jesus. Mm-hmm. It is changing you. It's not like I need to change myself, read my Bible, love my wife. Yeah, all that. But I am honoring and serving and worshiping Jesus when I am doing that, when I'm bending my life for the sake of my wife. That is the becomes the holy ground mm-hmm. conversation. Yeah.
I always think I use this way back when you were still in the drum kit as a teenager. But I remember doing a series, and I don't remember what we called it, but there was a couch, and we talked about marriage, and we said, how would our marriages look different if Jesus was just always physically there present on the couch?
Hmm.
And we talked about, like, everybody's a good husband when people are watching. Oh, I'll get the door for my wife. You fight different. You ever had a fight? I don't know. You guys probably don't fight. But you ever have a fuss up or a dust up at your house, and then the doorbell rings? And it's amazing how all of a sudden – and so I think to myself, sometimes we can minimize the presence of Jesus with us all the time.
Yeah.
And then it's not just the presence of Jesus, but the presence of the one who gave up his life for us.
Yeah.
And so I think what Paul is saying is, remember, he's there. That's not just like you ought to buck up and behave. Remember, he's there, and he is the one who gave up his life for you. And so everything you do, even the way you fuss, even the way you do the dishes, whatever, becomes this response to who he is and what he's done.
Yeah.
And that changes everything. I mean, everything about everything, as you taught us in the first sermon. Yeah. Every moment becomes holy at that point. Yeah.
You had said on Sunday, and just known this from working with you, that maybe one of the most popular conversations or most frequent conversations you have in your office is couples,
mm-hmm.
whether it's them together, just one of them, and walking through different stuff. What are some of the, like, when you always say, if my walls could talk,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
what are some of the most common things that people kind of come in that need help or need discuss? Because it's very easy to feel like we're the only ones who are having this problem. We're the only ones who are navigating this.
Mm-hmm.
No one else is figuring this out. They have all their stuff together. What are some of those common things that you're talking with people about? I know you're using this picture as like a reference point, mm-hmm. even if you don't draw it in your head. Yeah, what are some of those conversations in the office?
Well, I would start by saying this. I think it's rare to think of a marriage that wouldn't at some point need some help or yeah. reminder. Think about it this way. I don't even thought about this. I don't know of any more intense relationship where two sinners try to join their life
yeah.
other than marriage. So I can be buddies with somebody. He's a sinner. We can get on each other's nerves, go to our own corners.
Mm-hmm.
You're married and you're with, right? And so when I sit with couples, I think some of the things that happen is there's this shock for sometimes because there are some couples, and by the way, if you're dating, they'll put their best foot forward, and they get married, and it's like, oh, you have another foot. You know, it ain't the best one.
It's that left foot.
Yeah, it's the left foot. And I think there's a shock.
Yeah.
I think marriage reveals, unlike any other relationship, the selfishness. Because honestly, whether it's money, whether it's hobbies, whether it's kids, whatever it is, sometimes the thing that drives people into my office, like is a selfish, like I see marriage as something that should be selfishly like filling something within me. And I think this, Aiden, if I were to say something that single, married, doesn't matter where you're at, if I expect my wife to fill a part of my life that only God was intended to fill, I will crush her and I will always be disappointed. Right?
Yeah.
But if I can relate with her out of allowing God to fill what he's to fill, all of a sudden, instead of crushing her, then I might be able to serve her. I might be able to. I would say men, and this one probably you could have guessed. I think men and women like don't realize that you're married for a minute. It's like, oh, yeah, God created us different, and that is beautiful, and we got to learn how to understand each other.
Yeah. Communication.
Like, my wife and I were that way. two things early on in our marriage. Like, one is just communication. My wife, there's this thing called love languages. Well, her love language is different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
And my love language, the way I show love, is I serve, acts of service. And my wife's is quality time. And so she wants to sit out on the porch and just talk. And I'm doing the dishes, vacuuming. And the whole time I'm doing that, she's out there feeling like, I must not be doing it good enough for him. She's feeling guilty. And I'm thinking, I just want you to know I love you. She said, well, I just want you to sit on the porch with me. And I'd sit on the porch with her and I'd say, and she said, I just want to talk. And I'd say, about what? You know what I mean? And we had to learn that because we were missing each other. And then I say tons of couples see conflict as a bad thing. And my wife and I weren't good at it when we were first married. Like, we just weren't good at it. And I would say, and sweetheart, if you're listening to this, I was probably the 80% of that.
Hmm.
Because I'm type A. I'm competitive. I talk a lot. My wife's not type A. She's not competitive. She's not as quick with words. And so we would have arguments, and I just went into football mode. I'm like, well, I think the goal is to win. The goal must be to win.
Yeah.
And so I would just wordsmith some things together and try to win the argument. And an old dude asked me, he says, how's it feel to win every argument? And I thought for a minute, I'm like, not great.
Hmm.
It's not going that well. And he said, well, why don't you make a different goal?
Hmm.
I said, what's the goal then? He said, why don't you make it a goal to understand her? And when you get in a conflict, why don't you ask a question instead of giving an argument? And why don't you look at your wife and say, help me understand why this matters to you that way? I said, I was like, why would I do that? You know what I mean? Like, and you know something, Aiden? I don't do that perfectly, but when I do that and she begins to describe to me, understanding leads to wisdom.
Hmm.
And Peter actually calls us husbands to live with our wives in a way of understanding. And that dude helped me.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, conflict wasn't a thing that drove us apart. But now I understand something different about my wife because we had a conflict. And if I'll ask that question, drive us together. So, I mean, there's a host of other things that happen. I mean, I get people in really tough situations, you know, and they come running in. How do we survive this, you know? That's where I tell everybody I have one bullet.
Yeah.
But I think the gospel's powerful.
Yeah, it's not that picture that is good for a newlywed who needs to figure out how to not fight about the dishes. Mm-hmm. But that's the same tool for what do we do with infidelity or secrets or loss or anything else. It's mm-hmm. the same tool.
Yeah.
You know, it has more power than we realize.
Same tool. Gospel's the power in the picture.
Yeah.
At the beginning, clear to the end.
What would you say on Sunday? You're like, I can't address everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like we said, there's 1,000 people, whatever, I don't know. 1,000 unique stories. You know, mm-hmm. people are married with different struggles, different circumstances, got married at different times with different backgrounds. There's people who are single for different reasons. Whether it's young, whether it's a loss, whether whatever, there's 1,000, you know, situations. If you just rapid fire, if we could rapid fire just a couple quick things that come to your brain. Mm-hmm. Rapid fire is always real good, especially when it's, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But when you think about different things, someone had asked me this question. You know, there's Bible speaks to divorce. You know, for example, we've talked about that in the past. I believe in the Ephesians series, we did a podcast specifically about it, if I remember correctly. Scroll back. I think it was 2023. It's probably back in there. But what would you say to someone who's like, man, I have been divorced, and so now I'm sitting here, I'm hearing about marriage, I'm remarried. What might you encourage them, 30 seconds to a minute, to what position would you encourage them to think through if they're listening to this?
My really quick, that's a great question, and if that's you listening, like, understand, we couldn't address that all on Sunday. That's why I think it's so important to just take a minute and ask questions and hear people's story. Everybody's story is different.
Yeah.
Somebody in that situation, because I meet with tons of people in that situation, the two questions that I would ask that person are simply this. One, am I being married rightly to the person I'm married to?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Am I being married rightly? So am I applying this? And then the second question I would ask them is this. Have I done everything I can to get rid of the baggage from the first marriage? What I mean is this, forgiveness.
Hmm.
If you're a follower of Christ, that person may have been awful. There may be really, 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 really good reasons. Or maybe you got divorced before you came to know Christ. There's a whole bunch of situations. But what I find is this. If I don't cut the baggage, I drag it into the next one. So the two things I say to people in that situation is, focus on how to rightly be married to the person you're married to.
Yeah.
And have I cut the baggage that I can cut? The person may still be bad. The person may still be hurtful. But am I dragging bitterness, resentment?
Sure.
Or have I surrendered that, done everything I can just to forgive the person in my heart, even if the relationship is one that it's just better to be distant from?
What would you say to someone, there's a whole host of someone who's maybe single, right? Like, we can sometimes in the church at large, you talk about marriage as if it's like the next level. You know what I mean? We can accidentally interpret it that way. What would you say to someone who's single, and there's a thousand reasons people are single? Could be everything from widowed to young to divorced to anything, to whatever. What would your encouragement be to someone who's single right
now? Yeah. Well, if I could talk first to our church maybe, and talk to people who aren't single and say, the first thing I think is this, that it's important for people not to treat single people like somehow they're second class, haven't arrived. That is important.
Yeah.
There are some people who are called to singleness. So scripture's clear about that.
Yeah.
There are some people, and I think our church is full of people like this, that desire marriage, and it's actually hard for them. It can be a struggle for whatever reason, the right person hasn't come along. And so when you ask, what would I say to a single person, somebody that was on the younger spectrum of things, I'd say slow down and be willing to be patient as you are looking for who I might date and or marry, and be willing to receive godly input is what I would say. Somebody that's older and single, where this like panic, or I would say don't compromise, for one. And I think it's okay to be real about the hurt of the unmet desire while trusting Jesus. I don't think trusting Jesus means that you can't be real about, like, I desire this. I believe this. It may be a different podcast, different sermon. One thing I wish, I don't know the cultural construct that has to happen for this. I wish there was more cultural constructs where mixed genders could just be friends in groups. Because of what I believe about marriage, it is a unique friendship. You've been married how many years now?
12.
12 years. My guess is the longer you're married, the more the friendship thing, you love your wife and, you know, I love my wife. I'm attracted to my wife. We enjoy the romance, all the things that go with marriage. And it's the friendship.
Yeah.
It's the friendship. And sometimes in our cultural construct, what happens is we make decisions based on the things that don't last the long haul. And then we start dating somebody that's really, really hot. And we're like, how do I become friends with them? Right? I'm not saying go date somebody you don't think's attractive. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the friendship is the thing that's going to sustain. So to single people, I say, I think the secret in this stage is you are not a second-class citizen.
Yeah.
Marriage is not graduation from, or it's not an accomplishment beyond where you're at. That is so key, that if God has you in this place, it's okay. He's okay if you wrestle with him. Don't run from him in the middle of your struggle as you trust him. And I think of the conversation I had with a young lady who used to live with us. Just imagine him looking. He said, do you believe I love you? Yes. Do you trust I want what's best for you? Yes. Do you believe I know more than you? Yes. Then we can keep walking, even though you're like, I wish I was married, or I wish I was dating. And so I would say, I meet with a lot of single people, and they're like, I know the answers, and don't idolize marriage, you know, is what a lot of people will say to them. By the way, if you're single, you'll get a lot of people that offer a lot of advice. And sometimes it's good. But also find places where it's okay just to blubber, snot bubble, cry, and say, I wish I was married or dating, and it hasn't been my... It's like okay to be real about how you feel. We go because of what we know. That's what faith is. But it doesn't mean you can't be real about how you feel.
Yeah.
And so I think it's okay to find those spaces. We can go because we believe God loves us. We trust him and he knows more than us. And it's also okay to say, I long for this. And the people that offer the advice that's not always that helpful, I don't think we need to be snarky with them or whatever. But I will tell you something, that you can be married and idolize marriage.
Yeah, yeah.
So just because you're single and somebody sees that, you can be married and idolize it. So I don't know that it's always fair what we say to single people, to be honest with you. So that I think that's what I would say to them.
Yeah, we were just talking before we started rolling about some of the ways Jesus was a celibate single man. You know, I mean, he's going to get married to the church one day. But... Like, we follow a single, you know, Paul, you know, when he wrote out, like, he was like, you should be like me. And he elevates single, singleness. You know, I think I've heard people refer to it as a gift, like gift of singleness, because there's people that are like, this probably don't feel like a gift right now. And a gift isn't always a gift for your whole life. You know, like, probably don't feel like a gift. There's married people that don't really feel like their marriage is a gift, too. But we're called to seek Jesus wherever we find ourselves. I think of that. I think I said this to you. There was a, and I'm gonna say it wrong, but he said that marriage shows us the fidelity of the gospel, and singleness shows us the sufficiency of the gospel.
Yeah, I love that quote.
Yeah, there's different aspects of the heart of Christ and what the gospel does for us that's revealed in those things that are to be treasured and valued. I think we can probably sit here and think of different people for different reasons. They're single in our church that are like, man, they're a hero. You know what I mean? The way God uses them and their state of life and all those things. That's just rock stars for the ways that God has and is using them in those ways. I love that.
I do think this about single people. If I mean, I think maybe we wouldn't even agree on this. I don't even know. But I think there is something that has happened culturally. And you're younger than me. You might be more plugged into this than me. I feel like there's some... Like, I'm around a lot of single guys. There's this fear of making the wrong decision, and I get that. Be wise.
Sure.
But marriage, I think we've created this, like, I don't want to marry the wrong one, as though I'm going to get married and there might be problems. I want to clear something. You get married, there will be problems.
Yeah.
That's not what even marriage is. We tried to debunk that Sunday. It's grabbing the hand of somebody and say, I'm in this better or worse, rich, poor. We're going to climb the mountain together. I'm not who I need to be, but God's still making me who he wants me to be.
Yeah.
And I think this fear of what if we get married and I find out there's something I don't know. You will. Like that's part of the journey that you're finding out. And so I think sometimes there can be a reluctance to move towards that, a fear that maybe needs to be confronted, like... In singles, but that being said, you know, I think you just got to find places to be honest about the desire while you trust the one that who knows your heart.
I agree with you.
Look at us.
I was not going to disagree.
Look at Pastor Aiden and I agreeing.
There is an article I remember reading years ago, but it was not a Christian article. It was like a, well, we got to live together before we get married, because what if we're not good roommates? We got sex from married. What if we're not good at sex? And it was not a Christian article. And they were like, make sure you lose a parent before you get married and see how they deal with grief. Make sure you get their time. And it was just like a whole life of things. That, like, make sure you figure out how they deal with a pet they don't like before you get married, because you might not like the way that. And it was supposed to be funny, just the whole idea that, like,
yeah,
that's what it is. I'm going to be committed to you. I'm not sure how Sarah didn't know what kind of dad I was going to be, what kind of midlife crisis I was going to have, you know, or whatever. But. Yeah, like, okay, last question I'd ask you is this, okay. And then I'm keeping you long. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're good.
I was talking to someone today, I was talking to someone recently. Our picture talks about, which I didn't tell him I was asking this question, you know, husbands leading, sacrificially like Christ, all those things, where it's easy to be like, hey, this person has this personality in the marriage, so we'll just go with that. What would you say to someone who's like, hey, the wife, she kind of is more the planner. She's more the type A person. She's better at that. Is that what it means to lead? Like, what would you say to someone in that boat?
Yeah, so one, maybe I didn't answer that true. He did not tell me he was asking this, but anyways, off the cuff. Two or three things I would say to that. One is I think our roles within marriage are gifts God gives us for the benefit of the other. So I want to be clear about that. So I want to answer the antithesis to that, the domineering man who's like, I'm the leader.
Yeah.
Let's make sure. I think it's totally missing the
boat. Right.
Totally missing the boat as to what that means. I would look and say our roles are God's gift. I think our personalities mm-hmm. are unique.
Yeah.
And so I would look at that man and say, just because your personality is different doesn't abdicate you from this call to serve your wife,
yeah.
to sacrificially love her, and to be a sanctifying agent,
yeah.
to know her. And the truth is, I would look at her and say, your personality doesn't abdicate. In fact, it may be the way you help him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that can play out multiple different ways. You have an introvert, extrovert. You have a high A leader, a low, you know, a woman who's maybe more type A. And he's – I don't think that abdicates the roles, and I think it can play out beautifully in different
yeah.
ways.
Yeah.
I think it's – finding how do I leverage my life for the sake of that person, the,
yeah.
who they are, the role they have in the marriage, and the way God made them.
Yeah.
And I would say to husbands, whether you're high A or not or whatever, like so, I said this Sunday in one or two of the services, like, what's your vision for her?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think vice versa for gals, you know, what's your vision for him? And then what can I do to cultivate that?
Yeah.
What can I do to you know, I think there are gals that have higher profile, whatever, opportunities. And I look at their, you know, I lost her name right now. This last week, Dolly Parton died.
Rest in peace.
Now, I don't know anything about Dolly Parton. Or she's a singer, whatever.
Except for Jolene.
Yeah. Right. That song right there, 9 to 5, all that kind of. But I was listening to this news article, and it was talking about her husband. He's a behind-the-scenes, he yeah. passed away, you know, whatever. But when she talked about him, you know, in their marriage, she yeah. would say, he was a strong leader. The world would look at him and be like, well, she was the, right? They, you know, I'm not saying they were Christians, but I don't know anything about them. But what I'm saying is yeah. it played out personality-wise.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's what I would say. I don't think it advocates it. I think it can be a beautiful way to say, how can I serve, lead, love?
I think that's a helpful way of clarifying what we're talking about when we talk about leading. It doesn't mean you're the point guard who's taking all the shots.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you're the coach who's drawing up all the plays.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means to lead, I think, is a wonderful mm-hmm. picture on how we complement. That's the how do we complement each other? How do we draw out what Christ has planted in each of us, personality and, mm-hmm. and gender and all those? Yeah, I love that. I got no more questions for you. I'm making you late to your next appointment.
Nah, this has been fun.
It's fun.
Thank you
it's
for
fun.
Making it. Thank you for making the podcast I promised possible this week.
That's why I'm here to compliment Dan.
There's more to this story.